Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Under the Hoodies. I am joined by the great Mike Pizeski. Mike, how's it going, buddy?
The great Mike Pizeski is a little bit lofty, my friend, but I'm doing well.
I don't mean to set the bar, you know, too high with the great part, but you know what? We were the originators of this show, Mike, and it's good to hear your voice on the other end of this these airwaves. So very excited.
Yeah, I'm also very excited. I'm glad you asked me to hop on tonight. It's been a while. You know, I was at the gym a couple weeks ago, and there was a guy. He must have been probably in his late 30s, and he was like, man, I used to be in great shape and all this and that. And he's like, you know what? Sometimes life happens, and that's really – when you get old, Bill, when you start to get old like we are, life happens.
Yeah.
And priorities seem to take shape, and – but you know what? It's good to be back. You know, we are the originators of this show, and we're gonna kill it for the next half hour, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. So you know, let's start killing it now. You're a big college football fan. You surely remember Sam Bradford at Oklahoma. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Did you know that Oklahoma offense that lost to Florida in the national championship was the fastest offense in college football that year?
A lot of people forget that. A lot of people forget that they ran a ridiculous up-tempo offense. They were a juggernaut on offense, and they ran into a buzzsaw of Florida. But people forget that. They seem to overlook that. I think I know where you're going with this, though.
Yeah, so why can't Sam Bradford succeed? And this is the biggest biggest asterisk to Barry Bonds. If he stays healthy.
I mean, there's a lot of factors that go into it. And, I mean, people are overreacting. They don't know. I mean, let's put it this way. Chip wouldn't go after the guy. He wouldn't give up, not even just Foles, but he wouldn't give up the draft pick if he didn't think that Sam Bradford could be the guy that could run his offense the way he wants it to be run. Injuries aside, Sam Bradford had one of the worst offensive lines in St. Louis. You're playing in a division where you're playing San Francisco, Seattle, Arizona twice. He's going to a much easier division, soft defenses, a better offensive line. And the point that you bring up about the pace of offense that he ran at Oklahoma, this is Chip's guy. He sought him out. Yeah, they're paying him a lot. Yeah, he's got 1 year to prove what he can do. But, you know, with a better offensive line, they signed Ryan Matthews today. Apparently they're still in the mix for DeMarco Murray. The weapons are going to be there. Chip's going to figure it out. Philly's panicking, and it's awesome because I love when Philly fans panic.
Trust me, as a Giants fan, I'm a big fan of it. But you know what? What I'm not a big fan of is, and we're not going to get into it because it's really not worth anyone's time, but we're not going to get into what the Giants have done in free agency. So, but
you don't like what they've done?
No, they signed JT Thomas, which I'm not convinced it's not Jonathan Taylor Thomas of Home Improvement fame. And I don't know the other guy they signed. And I watch the NFL pretty regularly, and I'm usually up on what the Giants do. They re-signed Mark Hurtlick, who's he's a backup, but he belongs in the NFL. I do love the Shane Vereen signing. I thought they got him for a pretty good price, and if they can defend McAdoo offense, he's going to do wonderful. But you know, back to Philly, because they're the most interesting team in free agency so far. Now, you said about their playmakers. I'm not exactly sure what they're doing as far as their playmakers go, because they have Jordan Matthews, Riley Cooper, and then guys that you and I could replace. So they get rid of their running back, the one of the three best running back in the league, in my opinion. They bring in Ryan Matthews, oft-injured Ryan Matthews, to pair with the oft-injured Sam Bradford, the racist Riley Cooper, and the talented Jordan Matthews. I actually really like Jordan Matthews, but there's no one in that offense now that scares me like there used to be. They let Jeremy Maclin go. Obviously, last season they let DeSean Jackson go. They trade Shady McCoy to my Buffalo, which, I would say my Buffalo, but my hometown Buffalo Bills, which I live about. I'd say, you know, with no traffic, about 12 minutes from the stadium. But I'm really not sure what Philly's doing. Like, they gave Byron Maxwell a Nate Clemens-ish contract what has Byron Maxwell done to earn that exactly? Oh, he played on one of the best defenses in the last 20 years. And this time last year, I don't know if he was guaranteed a roster spot. And now he's making, what, 28 mil guaranteed?
Well,
go ahead. What are they doing?
Look at it. When Chip has made it known that he's going to invest his money in the defense, and to me, it's a lot like Bill Belichick. He believes in his system. He believes in his plan. And you know what? When you're at the highest levels, anything that you do, I don't care if it's business, banking, farming, anything, you've got to have confidence. And Chip Kelly has that. Bill Belichick has that. And you know what? That's to me, that's all you need. I'll sign up to run through a wall for that guy. If he believes in it and he believes in me, sign me up. But the thing is, you know, if you're going to invest, you know, the players aside, Byron Maxwell, whoever it is, it doesn't matter. He thinks, and he did it at Oregon, Bill. He did it with average guys at Oregon. They didn't have the greatest recruiting classes. They just found really fast kids that could fit into the system, and it worked. I think he's just trying to replicate that here. And this is new to people in the NFL. It's like when the Wildcat came in. It's like when the read option came in. Oh, it's a fad, and what are they doing, blah, blah, blah. You know what? They were fads. But to me, I think there is a master plan here. And you know what? I believe in Chip Kelly. I think he knows what he's doing. But I'll tell you what, if this fails, he will be run out of Philly real quickly.
Run out of Philly faster than Santa Claus was, that's for sure.
There's no question. But, I mean, who are we to say, who is anybody to say, oh, it's going to fail, blah, blah, until we see it, man. And the worst part is we've got 6 months until we find out.
I'm not necessarily convinced it's going to fail. I guess I'm more just confused. But, like, you made a good point, which is this is something we really haven't seen before. And I guess, you know, we're so used to tradition. We're used to sort of like, all right, this is how you build a team, and this is what you do. And, I mean, with Chip's offense has been sort of poached is probably too strong of a word, but used by a lot of NFL teams. Like Bill Belichick years ago used to go, and he added elements of the spread offense to his offense.
Sure.
I mean, this is something Chip's, you know, not really germane to just Chip in the NFL. Like, he's been sort of, you know, trying to revolutionize football, try to think outside of the box. I know he's got his guys on these weird nutrition plans and the shakes and all that jive too when he first came in. But, you know, it's just, I guess on paper, I'm not sure if what he's doing makes a lot of sense, especially with these, the Byron Maxwell thing. I mean, you know, Sam Bradford aside, the Byron Maxwell contract is still really confusing just because you're not willing to pay Shady McCoy, you're not willing to pay DeSean Jackson, you're not willing to Jeremy Maclin, three really good, proven NFL guys, but you're going to give Byron Maxwell 6 years, $60 million. I mean, granted, a little less than half of that is guaranteed, but I think it's a little bit absurd to give him that kind of contract. And I realize he's sort of taken the power from Howie Roseman, or excuse me, Roseman. But I don't know. You're right. Maybe. Go ahead, sorry.
To me, it's an upgrade over what they had last year. They, Kerry Williams, and I couldn't even tell you whoever the hell else they had in that defensive backfield. They were terrible last year. It's an upgrade. Okay,
right.
You know, it's about investing in your defense. And people think, you know, oh, he's just trying to get Oregon players. He's just trying to get his buddies in there. Look at it this way. 2 years ago, Kiko Alonso was the talk of every town. He's the legend of Kiko Alonso in Buffalo. You know all about that. This
guy
is a phenomenal.
Oh, yeah.
He's a phenomenal talent. That torn ACL, I mean, you take the risk. The way the surgeries are now in medical treatment, I wouldn't even worry two buckets about that. He's going to be fine. So you get a linebacker, a youthful linebacker who's on his rookie contract, costs no money. You sign Brandon Graham back. You know, you're investing in your defensive backfield. To me, it's all part of the plan. You invest in your defense. You save the money. And you talk about the money for Byron Maxwell. Think about the money that they would have had to spend on Maclin, McCoy, and DeSean Jackson. That can handcuff you in terms of the cap. Just look at what happened to the Bears, having to trade Brandon Marshall for a fifth-round pick. The Saints with Jimmy Graham. Sometimes you just have to get rid of these players, so it's not even worth it in the long run. If he can find his guys via the draft, via free agency, think about it, Bill. Last year, Ryan Matthews was having a great year, a freak injury at the end of the season. I can't remember what game it was. It was a freak injury, though, and his season was done. Ryan Matthews getting hurt again. It was a freak injury. It happened. You know, accidental injuries don't, you know, he's had his issues. He's talented, or else San Diego wouldn't have traded up to pick him in the first round.
That's a good point.
I don't know. I just don't understand. The guy's taking a lot of bullets right now, and to me, it's unfair.
Well, and we're going to switch gears actually in a second, but the thing about the Oregon players, I actually sort of disagree with. I think he's getting all these Oregon players because he's running an offense, or he's running a team similar to how he did in Oregon, and those are the best players for that. So the guys in the NFL that played for Oregon are also going to be the best players in the system that he ran at Oregon. So I actually understand what he's doing there. I don't necessarily have a problem with that. But we're going to switch gears real quick to the Jimmy Graham trade, who you just brought up. Okay. You know, Saints are basically, they're sort of having a fire sale because they're so far over the cap. I think they are, last I heard, I think they're like something $21 million over the cap, which is crazy. You don't see numbers like that or get that out of control in the NFL. And I'm not 100% sure what they're doing either. But I actually sort of like the trade. And both players and I heard this, and it kind of rings true, both players are actually better players at their positions than the trade the Bills and the Eagles made. Max Unger's probably the best center in the league, and I think there are rushing stats with and without him for Seattle last year sort of backed that up. And Jimmy Graham's just, you know, other than Gronkowski, and really the only thing that separates those two is Gronkowski's ability to block. But Jimmy Graham is just one of the, you know, five best weapons in the NFL. So did you like the trade or did you not like the trade?
I like the trade for New Orleans. I'm not sure how I feel about it for Seattle. You give up a first-round pick and you basically take one of the major cogs out of your offensive line. Remember last year when they had Percy Harvin and they were trying to do all these cutesy plays and everything, and it just wasn't working. Their offense was out of sync. A lot of injuries, I understand that, but they just weren't the Seahawks from when they won the Super Bowl. They weren't cramming it down your throat. They weren't doing it. They let Percy Harvin go, and I made note of that. I'm like, they're going to get back to the fundamentals. They're going to get back to running the ball, and that's what they did. Now I feel like you trade Unger, and all of a sudden you're bringing Jimmy Graham, and he can't block anybody. And now you're just kind of getting away from what got you to where you were. That's your identity, your smash mouth, your road graders. And now what are you going to do? You're going to open it up a little bit? You're going to go three wide out, one tight end? To me, it gets away from their identity. And for New Orleans, you shed all this cap space, you get a first-round pick, you get an all-pro center. To me, it's fantastic. If you think about it, it might extend Drew Brees' career another year or two, getting him a little bit more protection. Maybe they run the ball a little bit more this year and utilize the rookie with Cooks that got hurt last year. Utilize him a little bit more, make him the focal point of the offense instead of a tight end.
And I mean, that's a possibility. I actually like the deal from the Saints perspective as well, because Jimmy Graham was kind of a I don't want to say distraction, but a little bit of a diva about his contract, and you know, to be as, you know, hamstrung by the salary cap as they were. And Jimmy Graham, if he has another amazing season, I mean, maybe they're sniffing sort of a holdout from him. And I do feel like there may be something else going on behind the scenes. I mean, I think Drew Brees was kind of upset about them getting rid of Jimmy Graham. And naturally, I mean, he sort of bails Brees out of a lot of things. Not that Brees isn't a good quarterback, but Brees is, you know, it's sort of a luxury to have a big tight end to just kind of toss the ball up and let him go get it. And, I mean, other than Calvin Johnson, Jimmy Graham is the best at doing that. So I can see why he's upset. But actually, I understand the move from both ends. I mean, you want to get another playmaker in there for Russell Wilson. You know, Marshawn Lynch isn't necessarily guaranteed, you know, after next season. And, I mean, their receivers are kind of a joke. They let Golden Tate go for, you know, speculated reasons. And we don't really need to get into that. That might be even kind of silly. But Jermaine Kearse, Doug Baldwin, I actually do like that kid that they sort of unleashed in the Super Bowl, but I don't know, you know, what his ceiling is. I mean, James Hardy was also a really tall receiver that didn't pan out in the NFL. But I mean, I guess I see the move from a playmaking standpoint for them and wanting to sort of get Russell Wilson some more weapons. But the you know, the, like you pointed out, the cog of the offensive line, I mean, that's huge. He's you know, one of their best players on offense. Granted, he's quote unquote just a center, but I still think giving up the first round pick was a little silly as well, because is Jimmy Graham and your best offensive lineman worth the you know, giving up your first round pick? I just don't see it. I don't know. I just don't see it. But Seattle's also, you know, made a lot of really smart moves and had really nice drafts sort of late in the draft. I mean, Richard Sherman, what, a third round pick, Russell Wilson, third round pick. You know,
well,
they've drafted
incredibly well over the last couple of years. That's part of the reason why they are who they are right now. But the thing is, it's, to me, I don't know, do you think it's an overreaction to that one particular play at the 1 yard line in the Super Bowl? Because you can make the argument that it is, because, you know, there is, you know, there aren't many red zone targets that put fear in your heart like Jimmy Graham does. And maybe it's an overreaction to that one play. Maybe it's an overreaction to pretty much being shut down by the Packers for 55 minutes.
Right.
I don't know. What do you think? I mean, to me, it is an overreaction. And it's just, you're just giving up far too much for a guy that really struggled at the end of last year.
I think so. I think it is a little bit of a home reaction, and I think that they maybe saw the need for a playmaker. So I don't think they had, outside of Lynch and Wilson, I don't think they had anybody that you know, really is a playmaker. I mean, Kearse and Baldwin are nice players, but they're not Calvin Johnson. They're not in that ilk. I mean, not a lot of people are, but Jimmy Graham is. So I guess I sort of see their logic. I don't know. As from a pure football standpoint, I don't know if I agree with it. And I don't know if he's exactly replaceable with, you know, whatever they're going to get in the draft in the end of the second round. I don't know. I understand it, but I don't think I would have made the move.
That's a fair point. In reality, though, I think if you're Seattle, you got to strike while the iron's hot. You see San Francisco, they're probably not trending upward at this point, to put it nicely. Arizona, you have a huge question mark with Carson Palmer at quarterback. In St. Louis, you know, Nick Foles, he potentially could be a great quarterback. They have a lot of questions on the offensive side of the football. So I think if you're Seattle, you know, you can justify it as, hey, let's strike while the iron's hot. Let's get Russell Wilson some weapons that he hasn't had. And then let's see if we can, you know, maybe match the defense, you know, with a little bit of offense. So when we do hold teams to 14 points, you know, we're scoring 28, we're scoring 31, and we're winning, you know, comfortably.
That makes a lot of sense. You're listening to Under the Hoodies with Bill Kegel and Mike Pizeski. And Mike, you know what? Let's just get to one of the biggest free agent signings in my lifetime, in Ndamukong Suh going on Miami. I don't know if it fits. I don't know if they really needed. I don't really know if he was a need, but and $60 million guaranteed is a whole lot of money. But players like him don't become available that often, so why not pull the trigger? What did you think of the move?
Let me ask you a question. When you go back and you think about how the Giants won a Super Bowl, how did they do it? It was with
I love where you're going with this. They controlled the line of scrimmage.
They controlled the line of scrimmage, man. And if you think about it, they already have two elite pass rushers in Cameron Wake and Olivier Vernon. Now you're going to get a guy in the middle who clogs up and frees these guys up to go one-on-one with the tackles. To me,
Cameron Wake is borderline unblockable. I'm just putting that out there.
Unblockable. And to me, it's, yeah, it costs a lot of money. They had to cut a bunch of dudes just to get under the cap to be able to assign to. But to me, this makes your defense so much better. And if the offense can finally get to the place, if Tannehill can just get over that hump, and he did at the end of last year, and they've got a lot of young receivers, and Mike Wallace can, you know, he might not be worth the contract that he signed, but he can blow the top off of any defense. And if that offense can, if they can just turn the corner, get over that hump, any other cliche you want to use, I think this is a team that can challenge New England for the division, given the steps back that New England has taken in the last few days.
Right, it would lose a Grievous, exactly. I think Miami's defense is going to be pretty scary. I mean, I you know, like you pointed out, their defensive line. I think I really think Brent Grimes is one of the, you know, the five best corners in the league. I think that they're going to make the secondary's job a lot easier. Obviously, the linebacker's job a lot easier. And they're just going to get a ton of pressure on the quarterback, which in the NFL, obviously, that's how you win. But I guess their success, even with Sue, is going to be dependent on Tannehill. And I actually like the steps that Tannehill sort of took in the second half of last year after all that talk of him about to be benched. Once he had that game in London, he never really looked back. He's in that, you know, that tier with Andy Dalton, but I think he's at the top of that tier where Andy Dalton is at the bottom of it, that third-tier guy. I'm curious if he can make the leap. And I actually think that defense being as good as it's going to be with those three on the defensive line, I wonder if that's going to sort of make everyone else's job a lot easier, including his.
It definitely is, and if you think about it, the biggest thing for Tannehill's development that the Dolphins organization could have ever done was keep Joe Philbin and keep that staff in place. And what do young quarterbacks need more than anything? They need consistency. They don't need to, you know, jump from system to system and learn a new playbook every single year. To me, it's just consistency. It's repetitions. It's thrown to the same guys over and over again. And I think that's finally what you're going to see this year. And listen, they could finish 5-11, they could finish 11-5. We have no idea, but that defense is going to be filthy. The question I have is, are they going to be able to surround Sue, Wake, and Vernon with enough playmakers on defense, given how much money he's eaten up? I mean, the dude literally gets a $60 million check from the Dolphins. You know what I'm saying? Like, they have no money to go out and sign really any other players. And then the funny part about it is they released 6-7 guys, and all, I wouldn't say that, I'm not going to call the Dolphins a poorly run franchise, but teams like the Patriots, the Giants, the Steelers, the Ravens are going to pick these guys up for bargain bin prices. That's the only concern I have with the Dolphins is how are they going to surround Sue and that front four with enough talent to be successful on defense.
It's a good point, and that division is going to be interesting this year. I mean, I with the Jets getting Revis and most likely going to get Cromartie, I mean, they have a nice, the Jets have a nice defensive line already with Wilkerson and Richardson, they re-signed David Harris. I really think that obviously they're average quarterback away from being right in the conversation with the rest of the division. The Bills are going to be really interesting as well.
Let me ask you, they traded for Ryan Fitzpatrick. Do you think he's more than enough to kind of put them not over the top? Obviously, I don't think they're going to win a Super Bowl. I don't think they're going to contend for a Super Bowl. You're talking about a team that went 4-12 last year. But do you think it's enough to get them in the question, get them to 8-8, 9-7, and really just kind of improve upon what was a dumpster fire last year?
Right. The thing I worry about with the Jets is their lack of offensive playmakers. I'm getting Brandon Marshall, who he didn't look good before his injury last year. So maybe he was hurt a little bit more than we thought. But I'm not really ready to sell on him as well, because Brandon Marshall is a top 10 receiver, you know, went healthy and he's on his game. Eric Decker is a nice number two. I mean, they don't really have much outside of Bilal Powell in the running game. And I don't even know if that's a lot.
But what it does,
line is, go ahead.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but what it does is it pushes, yeah, Brandon Marshall's 32. Yeah, he's on the back nine of his career. But what it does is it makes him a number one. It makes Eric Decker a number two. Eric Decker can be an effective number two. We saw it in Denver a couple years ago. He's not a number one. He never has been. He never will be. But he is a damn good number two.
Peyton Manning's not throwing to him, though.
No, I understand that. I completely understand that. But what it does is it puts your second best cornerback on Eric Decker, and you know you're not going to see two stud cornerbacks every week. I guess my point is that even though Brandon Marshall is on the downside of his career, even though Eric Decker is not a number one wide receiver, they're more than capable playmakers on the outside. They're big physical targets. They're great run blockers, which is a huge asset to a team that is going up the ball. I don't know. They're not going to contend for a Super Bowl, and then that, you know, when terrible teams sign, you know, big ticket free agents like this, the fan base is just erupt, and it's super nauseating, and I'd never quite understand it.
No, that I agree with as well. I was just actually more making the point that the division is going to be interesting. It actually might end up being the best division in football. Now, obviously, the division also lacks, outside of Tom Brady, a legit franchise quarterback. I mean, I don't know if Tannehill's that guy. EJ Manuel hasn't really shown that he's going to be that guy. And Geno Smith is definitely not that guy. The thing, really quick, I'll just say something about EJ Manuel. I'm curious if his career can be sort of resurrected by Greg Roman, who did wonders with Kaepernick. Now, a lot of people are going to say, maybe that was Harbaugh, but if Greg Roman is even bringing elements of what he brought, if he learned anything from Jim Harbaugh to Buffalo, EJ Manuel is a talent. He is plenty of arm talent as a quarterback. Now, if he can get it mentally, or if they're or Greg Roman's offense can be tailored to his strengths, I am curious, what can become of EJ Manuel. They brought in, Matt Castle sort of to compete with him, but I'm actually just sort of curious how that offense is going to look with EJ Manuel likely starting. I mean, as I just said earlier at the top of the show, you're a big college football guy. What about EJ Manuel in college? Did you see that, that could translate to the NFL?
Honestly, nothing. To
Interesting.
me, yeah, to me, EJ Manuel is always that guy that never. He has all the physical tools, don't get me wrong. He's big, he's strong, he's mobile. He's just not the best decision maker. He never really faced a lot of pressure at Florida State. He never really realized his full potential. You could say the same thing about Christian Thomas, another Florida State quarterback. To me, he never got over that hump. He never. Even though Taj Boyd isn't in the NFL, Taj Boyd maximized all his potential at Clemson and played lights out his last 2 years. And everybody's waiting for EJ Manuel to do that at Florida State, and he never did. And to me, it was a stretch to take him as high as the Bills did. They've got him to playmakers, but one thing they haven't done, Bill, is solidified that offensive line. And you talk about consistency with the staff and the playbook for young quarterbacks, another huge key is an offensive line, and to me, they haven't addressed that the way that they should have, and he's going to struggle. And in all fairness, if Matt Castle plays, Matt Castle's probably going to struggle as well.
Yeah, I think outside of an elite quarterback with that offensive line last year, most quarterbacks would have struggled. But that's the thing that sort of worries me about Marrone. Marrone was a big offensive line guru, and then the offensive line severely regressed under him. I mean, to steal a sort of quote from Brian Shipley, Doug Marrone was more conservative than Rush Limbaugh on a Wednesday morning, which is one of my favorite Brian metaphors ever. But made me laugh.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's good stuff. But Doug Marrone, I just wonder how much of everything that happened with the Bills the last 2 years is a product of him and his inability to be a head coach. I mean, what they did last year, granted, 9-7, and everybody should be, happy in Buffalo or whatever, but I think the team sort of underachieved last year under Doug Marrone, because that defense, that's a championship level defense. They're one of the, in my opinion, one of the three best defenses in the league, maybe even the two up there with Seattle. And I don't know. I just hope that this coaching staff can sort of make it easy on whomever the starting quarterback is, and just kind of a ground and pound offense, that sort of a ball control offense, and just win games defensively. I mean, that's not how you win Super Bowls, but that is how you get that.
What concerns me is that Rex Ryan had two cracks at developing young quarterbacks, and he failed miserably both times. And if
Good
you're,
point.
you know, if you're entrusting him with the keys to your franchise, the keys to your quarterback, that's probably not the guy I would have chosen. That's why I'm glad you mentioned Roman and his role with Cap and everything. But what did Cap have in San Francisco? You know, despite not having playmakers, he had an incredible offensive line. So it's really kind of like a reversal here. He's got great weapons on the outside with Watkins and in the backfield with McCoy, but there's so many holes up front. So it'll be interesting to see if Rex Ryan can, third time's a charm maybe with a young quarterback. Maybe he can strike a nerve and really get EJ Manuel to finally realize the potential that he does have.
Yeah, I agree, and that's a great point, and I'm curious to see if Incognito is worth the addition, and if they can, sort of get the offensive line back on track toward again's career, maybe, turn Chantrell Henderson into what his potential was going to be. Quandaro, I mean, there is a ton of question marks, but they're not really devoid of talent. It's just more can these guys reach their potential? Because they do have guys that, you know, high-ish draft picks. I mean, Henderson probably would have been a first-round pick if he wasn't an idiot off the field. So, I don't know. Right. It remains to be seen. But, Mike, I think that's our time, buddy. Good. I'm pumped having you on the show. This was awesome. And, you know, we'll have you going on, coming back on in the future. You know, there's no doubt in my mind about that.
Absolutely, man. I look forward to it. That half an hour was definitely a quick one, that's for sure.
Absolutely was. But all right, Mike, good talking to you. I'm going to do some Twitter handles and all that fun stuff real quick if you want to throw yours out.
At the mayor. I actually changed it. It's funny. I used to be called the mayor in high school. I used to be able to shoot the lights out at you old intramural basketball at Edison High School back in New York. No joke. I can't make this up. So I changed it to the mayor in honor of March Madness. So you can hit me up at the mayor.
No one's taken that Twitter handle. Yours, the mayor.
No
one's taken that. I can't believe that was available.
I feel
like
I got a
copy. PHA. Yeah. I'm in.
But that's
all right. Well,
that's where you can find me. So.
All right, man. Well, sweet. Twitter Mike at the mayor. Twitter me at Bill Kegel. And, you know, look for us on backsportspage.com. Mike, again, it was a pleasure.
It was a pleasure, but I'll talk to you soon.
All right, later.